everybody. Thanks for making your way back to the virtual Medicine of Mindset stage. I'm Jana Danielson. I am your host, and I have a really important, special, sparkly guest coming onto our virtual stage, Marcy Shymoff. And I know that name is going to be familiar to you. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Marcy. She is the number one New York Times bestselling author. She's a world-renowned transformational teacher and expert on happiness, success, and unconditional love. And we're going to get to pick her brain a little bit today about those aspects of health and wellness and life. Her books include the runaway bestsellers, Happy for No Reason, Love for No Reason, six titles in the Chicken Soup for the Women's Soul series. And I'll never forget being in Costco and seeing this series. And I was like, what is this? So the fact that I get some time with her today is a little bit of a fangirl. I'm going to be honest. Her books have sold more than 16 million copies worldwide in 33 languages. And it really have topped all of the major bestseller lists. And this is really cool when I read this. She's been on the New York Times bestseller list for a total of 121 weeks. Like, that is phenomenal. Marcy is one of the best-selling female nonfiction authors of all time. So she knows her stuff, ladies and gentlemen, and we get to learn from her today. She is the host of the national PBS television special, Happy for No Reason. She's a featured teacher in The Secret and the narrator for the award-winning film, Happy. She co-leads a worldwide program called Your Year of Miracles, which many of you might be familiar with, and with thousands of participants from 72 countries that have been touched by the brilliance of this amazing woman. And so she really has inspired millions of people from around the world and is dedicated her whole entire life to helping people live more miraculous, empowered, and joy-filled lives. And I feel like we just need more of that. So Marcy, thank you so much for saying yes to this summit and being with us today.
Oh, I'm delighted. I love what you're doing with this summit. And I'm so happy to get to be here and share some hopefully very useful things for everybody.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay. So let's ground this conversation in the concept of a life filled with miracles. Tell us a little bit about your story and how this idea of feeling like we deserve a life of miracles came to be.
Yeah. So I have to start at the beginning. And the beginning is I was born depressed. I came out of the womb with what I call existential angst. Yeah, I had a great family, great parents, wonderful circumstances, but I just had this dark cloud around me. And I actually, later in life, believed that it was some ancestral depression and trauma, perhaps. But I went through my childhood depressed. My solution to depression in those days was something called sugar. I became a sugar addict at a young age. By the time I was in high school, I was about 40 pounds overweight, did not contribute to my being any happier, that's for sure. And so when I was in my early 20s, I wanted to be happy. You know, I wanted what everybody wants, to be happy. And I did what I thought people do to be happy. I set goals for myself. And I figured once I hit those five goals, I'll be happy, right? And I'm going to share those five goals with you because I think people can relate to these. Number one, I wanted a successful career helping people. Two, I wanted a great husband or life partner. I wanted wonderful friends. I wanted a comfortable home. And the fifth one was I wanted the equivalent of Halle Berry's body. Now, I got four out of the five. I do not have Halle Berry's body, but I have a healthy body for which I'm very, very grateful. So I worked really hard to get all my ducks in a row to make sure I had all these things. And I had a turning point moment. It was in 1998. I had three books in the top five on the New York Times bestseller list all at the same time. I had just finished giving the speech to 8,000 people. I had autographed 5,432 books. They were counting. And my client had hired a massage therapist to massage my hand every few minutes so I didn't, you know, I could keep on signing. On one hand, I felt like an author rock star. But after I signed the last book, I went up to my hotel room. I walked over to the windows. It was in Chicago, the huge windows overlooking Lake Michigan. And I walked over and I took in that beautiful view on top of the world. And I turned around and I collapsed onto the bed in tears. And I collapsed in tears because I realized I had worked so hard for all of that. And I still have that same emptiness in my heart that I had as a little kid. It didn't help. And I realized this was the end of the road. I could no longer fool myself into thinking that just that next thing, then I'd be happy. And so I actually dove headfirst into the study of happiness. And I interviewed over 100 at the time. I've now interviewed over 1,000, what I call unconditionally happy people, people who are happy for no reason, you know, different circumstances, but just happy no matter what. And I interviewed the researchers and I started doing what they were doing, and it worked. I would say I went from a D plus in happiness, if you were grading me, to an A. I'm a solid A. Now that doesn't mean I'm still a work in progress. It's always ongoing, but it works. And so I've taught this to thousands of people. And then about 10 years ago, I started waking up every morning and going, wow, my life is just miraculous. Like it is like the right people would, I had no idea what the day would hold, but the most cool people would show up, or, you know, things would happen that were just like, you know, when you're in the flow. And I thought, man, I know how to live a miraculous life. I think I know how to live a miraculous life. Let me test this out. And I started testing that out with teaching that to people, and it works as well. So anyway, that's my nutshell of a story. And the good news is I know that no matter where somebody is in terms of their happiness, or where they're in their life, they could be completely, you know, like, oh my God, I'm tearing my hair out, I need a miracle. It is absolutely possible for everybody to shift their life. And it's nowhere near as hard as people think.
Okay, so now that we've set the stage with that and people are like, oh, we want more. Tell us about this concept you have called the miracle zone. What is it? How do we get there? Let's go in that direction.
Great, perfect. I need to speak, I think, a little bit about happiness first, so that it can make sense what I'm talking about in the miracle zone, if that's okay.
Absolutely, let's do that.
Okay, yep. So I'm gonna pick up the miracle zone in a few minutes. But what I found is that people have, the reason that some people are super happy and other people aren't, really doesn't have to do with their circumstances. It has to do with something called their happiness set point. We all have a happiness set point, and no matter what happens to us, whether it's good or bad, we will tend to hover around our happiness set point. It's like a thermostat setting. So, you know, people who win the lottery think, oh, if I win the lottery, I'll be happy. You would be for a couple of months. But within about a year, you would return to your happiness set point. The same is true of people who have tragedies happen. Usually within a year or so, they return to their happiness set point. So the set point is key, and here's how it's determined. It's 50% genetic. You're born with that. Now, I was not born with the good genes on that. It's only 10% your circumstances. Here's what people are busy trying to change to be happy, is their circumstances. It's only 10% of the equation. The other 40% is our habits of thoughts and behavior. And that's where we can really move the needle. But I'm going to take this a step further. Scientists in the field of epigenetics, like Dr. Bruce Lipton, who wrote The Biology of Belief, they say that when we change our habits, we also can influence our genes, that DNA, that 50% that's the genetic piece, which means that 90% of our happiness set point can be shifted by changing our old habits. Now, to me, this should be headline news. This should be taught in all the schools. We know what it takes for people to be happier. It takes changing certain habits. And I just want to take a moment, if I can, and go through those habits. And this will lead us into the miracle zone, if that's okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So I found there are 21 main happiness habits, and they fell into 7 areas. And so I'm going to go through these 7 areas with you. And I want you to think to your, to, you know, as I go through these, to think, where am I the weakest? So I want everybody to identify where they're the weakest, because that's your Achilles heel, and that's where you want to start in terms of raising your happiness. So the seven areas, it's hard to remember seven of anything, so I created a metaphor. I call it building your inner home for happiness. So your inner home for happiness. A home has seven main areas: a foundation, four corner pillars, a roof, and a garden. And here's how this relates to happiness. The foundation is taking responsibility for your life and your happiness. It's being a victor in life, not a victim. And you know you're a victim when you blame, shame, or complain. So the starting place is taking responsibility for your life and your happiness, no matter what your circumstances are. Then the four corner pillars are the pillar of the mind, our thoughts, the heart. Do you live with an open heart? People who are happy always have an open heart. They are generous, they are loving, they are kind, they forgive easily. Then there's the pillar of the body. Do you have the biochemistry of happiness? Do you have enough serotonin, oxytocin, endorphins, GABA? That, by the way, was where I was weak. And then the pillar of the soul. Do you feel connected to the greater energy of the universe? I don't care what you call it, whether you call it God, the divine, nature, creative intelligence, doesn't matter. It's that you feel like you are connected to a bigger energy. Then there's the roof, and the roof has to do with your purpose in life. Are you living a purposeful, passionate life? Are you waking up inspired, doing what it is you're here to be doing? And then finally, the garden, and that has to do with who you surround yourself with. Do you surround yourself with roses and gardenias, you know, people who are cheering you on and supportive? Or do you surround yourself with some weeds, the people who are dragging you down? So those are the seven areas. And Jana, you're going to be my guinea pig. Where are you the weakest?
I am the weakest. I would say that I'm working in my garden right now. Yeah.
That's a very common one. It's very, you know, and it's hard, because sometimes the negative people in our lives are the people that we work with. We can't avoid it. People that we live with, our families. And so we have to become skillful in how do we handle that situation. And the other thing is, especially if you've got challenges with the people that you're around, make sure that you find yourself another circle of support, of like-minded, like-hearted people who don't think you're crazy for thinking that, you know, you can go for your dreams and you can be happier and all of that. It's so important to surround yourself with support.
So good. And I love the analogy. And I think that that's one way for us to really, you know, anchor in to these seven areas of happiness.
And so, you know, and I want to go more deeply into what are some of the things we can specifically do for some of these areas. But let me ask the question, answer the question that you asked initially about miracles. Mm-hmm. So what I found is that as people become happy, everything in life is an energetic vibration. Happiness is an energetic vibration. You get around somebody who's unhappy and you can feel it, right? It's like, ugh, this is a drag. There is an energy there. You get around someone who's happy and it's contagious. Oh, this feels really good. I like this. People who live in what I call the miracle zone are people who are vibrating in a higher energetic vibration. And so what do I mean by the miracle zone? Let me talk about miracles. Webster says that a miracle is a surprise and welcome event that can't be explained by science, that's often attributed to grace, like divine grace, you know? We can't create miracles. Miracles are a gift of the universe. But what we can do is we can create the conditions for miracles to flow more in our lives. And that's what I have seen. I've spent the last 10 years, researching this and teaching this. And what I have seen is that it is possible to live in more and more and more in this place called the miracle zone. You know, athletes talk about the zone, living in the zone. This is living in the zone in life. You know, it's like where life is just, you know, the wind is at your back and life is more in the flow. So that's the miracle zone.
So do you have, can you, because I think we are a society that loves hearing stories. And so do you have examples that you can share with us from your work on some of these miracles?
Sure. I let me start by sharing an example that blew my mind. It was in one of the early Chicken Soup for the Soul books. And this is where I started really seeing that, you know, the miraculous is so prevalent. Because so many of the Chicken Soup for the Soul stories were about miracles, things couldn't be explained. You know, it was like, wow, that's pretty amazing. So this one story is about a man named Marcel Sternberger. And this took place back in 1948. Marcel was a very methodical man, and every day he would take the subway, the same train, into work in New York City. This one day he stopped to see a friend and he took a totally different train. So randomly he was on a different train. And as he got on, there was only one seat left. So he went and sat down in that seat. And he noticed that the man sitting next to him was reading a Hungarian newspaper. And Marcel was Hungarian. So he turned to the man and, you know, he said, you know, what's your name? And the guy said, my name is Bella Paskin. And they started talking. And it turns out that Bella had just arrived a few months earlier in New York from Europe. And he shared a story about how he'd been in the war and how he'd had many atrocities happening, and he was off the war. And when he got back, he had to walk back miles after the war was over to his hometown in Hungary, only to discover that his whole family had died, and you know, most of the town had died. And he was devastated. His beloved wife had been killed. And after a few years, he finally made his way to America. Well, this story sounded very familiar to Marcel. And he said to, he had been at a party earlier in the week and had met someone with a similar story, a woman with a similar story. And so he said to Bella, what's your wife's name? And Bella said, oh, my wife, she's been dead for years, but her name was Maria. And Marcel said to Bella, we have to get off at the next stop. And they got off at the next stop. They ran to a payphone, and he called the phone number that he had written and he had in his pocket from the woman he'd met at the party. And he said to the woman, what was your husband's name? And she said, oh, my husband's been dead for years, but his name was Bella Paskin. He handed the phone to Bella and he said, say hello to your wife. I know. I call them God bumps. Did you get chills?
Oh, like, well, yeah. Yeah.
It happened on a Brooklyn subway. So there you go. You know, I mean, the likelihood of him getting on the different train that he gets on, there's one seat available. Okay, that's the extreme of miracles. But the everyday garden variety of miracles is, I need $930 to pay the bill and I don't have it. I get a check in the mail for $930 today. How's that happen? Or even, you know, 950, doesn't have to be exact. You know, it's just being in that flow. It's having people who have health challenges and their doctors say, you know, it's not possible for you to do this. And they do the things that keep them in the miracle zone, and they have health miracles. So we have money miracles, health miracles, meeting your soulmate miracles. I mean, just the whole gamut, because it's about just in general, putting your life in that zone where life works.
Okay, so
how do we do it?
How do we do it? That's the next question.
So there are so many different things that we can do to put ourselves more in the miracle zone. But it's about really being in the flow of life. And one of the ways is, we'll go back to my areas of the heart, of happiness. One of them is living open-heartedly, leading with the heart. You know, what we see is that people live most of their lives from their head. Now, our minds are wonderful servants, but they are not great masters. And people who are in the flow lead with love, lead with their open-heartedness, and they let their mind follow the commands of the heart. So one of the things that we do is that we connect in with creating a more coherent state of the heart. And what this means is there's a wonderful organization called the Institute of Heart Math. And they're the world's leaders of the heart and happiness. And what they found is that if we are angry or frustrated for just 5 minutes, it can weaken our immune systems for up to 6 hours. But when we're feeling grateful or open-hearted or appreciative, it can strengthen our immune systems for up to 6 hours. Now, these days we want to have strong immune systems, right? So I'm going to show you a practice that they taught me. It takes not 5 minutes, it takes 2 minutes. And what it does is it moves us into what they call heart rhythm coherence, where our heart rhythms are more in a uniform line, uniform wave. And that's one of the things that can put us more in the miracle zone. So very simple process. I want everybody to do it. Jenna, I'm going to ask you to do it with me, and we're going to ask you at the end how you feel any different than you do now. So if you're watching this, do it along with us. You will get nothing out of watching us do it. Okay. So we want everybody to experience it for yourself. So first, start with your eyes closed. You can do it with eyes open, but it's deeper with your eyes closed. There's three steps. So the first step is to simply place the palm of your hand on your heart. That simple act of putting your hand on your heart starts the flow of a chemical called oxytocin, which is known as the bonding hormone, the love hormone. It's what we feel when we feel more bonded with other people. Just putting your hand on your own heart stimulates the flow of oxytocin. Now, the second step is to imagine that you're breathing in and out through the center of your heart. It's called heart-focused breathing. So imagine that your breath, your inhale is going into your heart. It can go deeper into your belly, but it needs to come in through your heart. And your exhale goes back out through your heart. So at your own pace, you're inhaling in through your heart and exhaling out through your heart. And you may already notice that you're starting to feel a little bit of a shift in your energy. Now, the third step is that on each inhale, imagine that you are breathing into your heart and you're breathing in love, ease, and compassion. You're exhaling out of your heart, and each inhale, you're breathing in love, ease, and compassion. At your own pace. Now, you can remember a time when you felt love, ease, or compassion. You can think about somebody who helps you feel that way, or a beloved four-legged. Or you can just quietly to yourself, silently say the words love, ease, and compassion. Any of those are effective. And one more time, breathe deeply into your heart, love, ease, and compassion. And on your exhale, you can slowly move your hand away. When you feel ready, you can slowly open your eyes. So as you're opening your eyes, I want everyone to notice, how do you feel any different than you did just 2 minutes ago? And so, Jana, you said you'd be my guinea pig. How do you feel any different, either physically or emotionally or both?
So physically, I feel warmer. And yet I feel lighter. Like, I don't feel like here. I feel this sense of warmth, like as if someone was giving me a hug. But I, like I said, I feel light. And I could feel myself physically smiling as I was listening. I wasn't smiling when I started, but I could feel the angle of my lips change as I was following your guided instructions. And yeah, like emotionally, I just, well, like, I mean, I just, it wasn't like I was not happy when we, because I have you here, but there's just the next level. And I love that you showed in 2 minutes the tool, because I think sometimes we get stuck in, I call it Eeyore. I feel like sometimes every person can be connected to a character from Winnie the Pooh. And I feel like some days we're like Eeyore, right? We're like that little donkey. We have the little pink bow on our tail, but everything is just like heavy, or, you know, there's a 90% chance that it won't rain, but there's still 10% chance it will, right? I'm feeling very like Tiggerish, very excited. And the shift in 2 minutes was remarkable. So thank you for sharing. And
so what you started to shift into was what science actually calls the love response. Science is, we've all heard of the stress response, and we know what that, you know, we know what that feels like. And it's actually a change in your brain activity, a change in your heart rhythms, and a change in your biochemistry when you go into the stress response. But they've also found that there's something called the love response that has its own brain waves, heart rhythms, and biochemistry. And it feels like this, and here's the deal. Doing this once, nothing's gonna change in your life. It's a nice experience, but so what, right? Here's what will really create a shift in your life. If you were to do this a couple of times a day for the next 2 weeks, you would start to habituate the love response. It would become more and more your default state. I've done this thousands of times. All I have to do now is go like this, put my hand up to my heart, and immediately the whole, my body has this memory of that. So I recommend, your homework is, try this 2 to 3 times a day for the next 2 weeks. And I do this when I'm sitting on the phone with somebody, they don't have to know it. I could be standing in line at the grocery store if there's a long line, and instead of getting frustrated, I'll do this practice. It changes things. So,
and Marcy,
that's the thing, as you said, it's simple. Yeah. It's just simple. And that's what I found. It's a lot of little simple habits that we can take on to shift into living more in the miracle zone.
You call it the heart resonance, or tell me what you called this?
Heart rhythm coherence.
Heart rhythm coherence. Okay. People here in the audience, I'm also taking notes, and I can tell you that I don't always take notes with my speakers. So I hope you are frantically also writing, unless you have the VIP package, which you'll be able to watch this back then. So, okay. So that was fantastic. And do you truly believe in your heart that anyone can do this?
I know it. Mm-hmm. So I have, worked with hundreds of thousands of people around happiness, and more recently around living in the miracle zone. And I have a program called Your Year of Miracles, and it's a year-long program where we actually look at every area of our life where we can have miracles. You know, miracles in your health, miracles in your success, miracles in your money, miracles in your self-love, and creating your biggest dreams. And I just absolutely know that this is possible for anybody, no matter where you are when you start. It's not hard.
Okay. All right. And so as we're talking about miracles and happiness and making these inspired actions, what do you think, based on, you have this long, beautiful career in helping people transform these days, what do you feel is not being talked about enough?
I think the general idea of happiness is so sorely missing from our education, our life. You know, if you ask people what they want, they're going to say, I want this, whatever it is. And then you say, why do you want that? The answer is always because I think I'll be happier. The ultimate goal is happiness. Aristotle said that happiness is the be all and end all of life. And we actually know how, we've cracked that happiness code. We know how people can be happier. And this should be taught in the schools. This should be, what is more important than teaching kids at a young age how to be happier? And I think we have so much emphasis on on all the bad stuff, that there's a lot of good stuff that's out there. You know, I let me just share one other little tip that I think is really important for people. And it's about our brain patterns. You know, the only difference between people who live in the miracle zone or people who are happier and people who aren't is their habits. That is really the only difference. They have different habits. And one of the biggest areas of habits that need help are the habits of the mind, the habits of our thoughts. You know, one of the principles I teach in Your Year of Miracles is to choose where you put your energy and attention, because what we put our attention on is what grows stronger in our life, and our minds dictate where we're putting our energy and attention. And most of us put our energy and attention on what isn't working in our life rather than what is working. And we get more of what isn't working. And I just want to share with you some brain science about how we change our neural pathways in the brain so that we have more of what we want easily, more habitually. So there are three simple practices, three simple steps to change, to creating new neural pathways in the brain for the positive. Let me back up a little bit. According to the research, the average person has 60,000 thoughts a day. And for the average person, 80% of those are negative. It's called the negativity bias. Don't feel bad if you have it. We inherited from our caveman ancestors who needed to remember the negative in order to survive. But we no longer have that same kind of need for that. My good friend, Rick Hansen, who wrote the Hardwiring Happiness, he says that our minds are like Velcro for the negative. They just stick to us, but they're like Teflon for the positive. The positive slide off of us. So you get 10 compliments in a day and one criticism. What do you remember at the end of the day? You remember the criticism. Happier people don't. Happier people Velcro the good stuff and Teflon the negative. Here's how you do that. Number one, you be on the lookout for the good. This is how we create new neural pathways in the brain. You actually pretend, this is one of the things that somebody I interviewed said that they did to be happier. She pretends that she's the Academy Awards committee, and her job every day is to give out 5 Academy Awards. So she'll be out for a walk and she'll see a cute, fluffy little white dog, and she'll say, "That dog gets the cutest dog of the day award." You know, it's just a game that you play, that you're looking for the good. And if you've got kids, do this game with your kids. Start them off with this. 5 things at least a day that you're giving an Academy Award to. So that's the first step. It trains the mind to be on the lookout. Second step, savor the good for at least 20 seconds. In order for it to make a difference, to actually start to create new neural pathways in the brain, we have to be on that good thing for 20 seconds or more. We don't have to be on it on the negative for anywhere near that, because we're so habituated for the negative. But the good to actually be installed in our bodies, in our minds. Rick Hansen says we have to savor it for 20 seconds. So if you see that cute little white dog, you don't just go, "Oh, there's a cute white dog." You go over to the owner and you say, that dog gets my cutest dog of the day award. I'm giving it the Academy Award." And you start talking about it. So you focus on it for at least 20 seconds. You see a beautiful sunset. You don't go, "Oh, that's a beautiful sunset." You take it in like you're taking in a meal. I'm savoring that sunset. So that's the second step, to savor. And the third step is to go for a 3-to-1 ratio, which means 3 positives for every 1 negative. Now, the negatives are going to happen automatically. So don't worry about it. Don't beat yourself up for it. That's just adding insult to injury. Quickly replace it for one negative. Quickly replace it with 3 things that you notice that are positive. And that tends to shift the energy and create the new neural pathways. So it might sound all airy-fairy, but actually it's science.
This conversation has brought me so much joy, because the part of the vision of this week is to offer people these bite-sized pieces of digestible aha moments. And Marcy, like, this conversation has been jam-packed with so much of that. And so I just want to thank you for how you have, you know, shown up here. And of all the little, you know, tools and tricks that you have shared with us today, Is there one or two that just resonate with you that you're like, this, these are my go-tos?
Yes, there definitely are. I'll give you two. Yeah. One of them has to do, you know, the biggest thing I've found that causes people to not be in the miracle zone, to be outside of that, is lack of feeling worthy. You know, I don't feel worthy of my good. And you think, oh, that's crazy. Of course I'm worthy. We tend to resist our good. We push it away. Because of lack of self-love. Most people really didn't have, and I'm not talking about self-esteem. Self-esteem is I like myself because I'm good at this or I whatever. I'm talking about self-love that's unconditional. I love myself no matter what. I forgive myself. I have compassion for myself. That's what we need in order to be more open to miracles. And I'll tell you a quick story about this in my own life. Years ago, I was at a workshop. It was, I think, in the 90s, mid-90s, with someone I loved, a mentor at the time. She's now a very dear friend of mine, Marianne Williamson. And Marianne was saying that if you make a lot of money, and you haven't raised your consciousness to receive this new level of money, you will lose it. And I thought to myself, that's ridiculous. That would never happen to me. If I made a lot of money, oh no, I would keep that. Well, sure enough, a couple of years later, my Chicken Soup for the Soul book started coming out and I was making much more money than I was used to. And sure enough, I started to lose it. I had not changed my consciousness to be able to feel the worthiness of keeping that. Fortunately, I remembered what Marianne said, and I started really working on that and changing the dynamics. But this is what happens. We tend to be our own worst enemies, blocking our own miracles from coming our way. So one of the things that's a go-to for me is to develop greater self-love is to ask myself a very simple question. And I want you to write this question down on a post-it or a piece of paper, because I want you to ask yourself this question a couple times a day. Question is, what's the most loving thing I could do for myself right now? Simple question. What's the most loving thing I could do for myself right now? And then go do it. Most of us are used to trying to think, what's the most loving thing I could do for this person or that person or this person? But what about ourselves? We need to entrain ourselves with self-loving habits. So right now, what's the most loving thing I can do is I could take a sip of water. It could be as simple as that. It could be I could call a friend to get some support. It could be I could go move my body a little bit because my body needs movement. It doesn't matter what the answer is. It matters that you're paying attention to what your own needs are. So that's one thing. The second thing I'm going to bring up is a little practice that I do with my husband every day that really shifted our relationship, and it's called the appreciation game. And all you do is you spend 30 seconds telling the other person a few things that you appreciate about them, and then they do it to you. We start our mornings that way. We end our evenings that way. And it changes the energy because, again, what you put your attention on is what grows stronger in your life. I'm going to do this for just not even 30 seconds. I'm going to do it for 10 seconds with you, Jana. And I want everybody to notice how you feel when I do this to you, and then I'll let you do it to me too. We'll do a little 10 second exchange. So Jana, one of the things that I really appreciate about you is your loving energy. I can feel in your field how caring and loving you are. And another thing I appreciate about you is what a great listener you've been and how affirming you've been to me in this process. And another thing I appreciate is your great dedication and enthusiasm to bringing this summit to people because you know it can help their lives.
So Marcy, I appreciate the fact that you took the time to listen to my invitation for the summit, to say yes, to show up today. I appreciate how elegantly and eloquently you offer your information. Since we know that not everyone is wired for this amazing life that they can have, and the hope, I appreciate the hope, I appreciate the joy, and I appreciate the the nuggets that have been planted, the little seeds that have been planted, because in this moment, it's not a coincidence that people are here listening to our conversation. And I appreciate the way you've shown up so that one day, maybe it's not today, maybe it's tomorrow, these tools that you have gifted us can resonate and start to build a beautiful foundation with a strong roof and the pillars and the garden, because we truly do all deserve a life full of purpose and love and happiness.
Thank you. So I want everybody to notice, how do you feel just even witnessing people appreciating each other? It feels good to be in the presence of that. So here's what I want to suggest. I think I've given you maybe 4 or 5 practical things that you could start doing today or tomorrow. Do not do them all. Pick one. Pick the one thing that most resonated with you about from this conversation and start doing it. And just do it for the next week. And just notice how, what happens. Just be, you know, use your life as an experiment. People don't make change in their life because they try to take on too much. The baby step is what makes it work. So pick one little thing, do it. It won't take more than 2 minutes. Nothing I gave you took more than 2 minutes. So pick one thing for 2 minutes, do it a few times over the next week and see what changes.
Oh, absolute like sparkly goodness in this conversation with you today, Marcy. I want to again thank you for being here and gracing our virtual stage here at the Medicine of Mindset Summit.
I'm so happy to have been here, and I look forward to seeing people in future situations or whatever. And I know that you're going to share how they can find out about the stuff I'm doing.
Yeah, amazing. So you know what? We'll have that information. But what is the best way for them to connect with you?
So I teach a program called Your Year of Miracles. I have a free ebook that I offer to everybody. It's called The 4 Biggest Mistakes That Keep People from Living in the Miracle Zone. And I have 4 really practical, cool things in there that you can do to live more miraculously. And that's just it. I think you'll give the link to that. Is that right?
Yeah, we absolutely will. I mean, you can also say.
Okay, it's at miraclesebook.com. Yeah. Miraclesebook.com.
Amazing.
And Jana, you know, I just want to, the last thing I would love to share if I can, is people always ask me, is it selfish? Is it selfish to want to be happier? Isn't it selfish to kind of be focusing on your own life and living in the miracle zone when we got so many problems in the world? And my answer is, I believe it's the least selfish thing you could possibly do. Because when you're happier, when you're living a more miraculous life, it affects everybody around you. And ultimately, I think it's the best thing that we can do for the world. There's a beautiful Chinese proverb that I love that kind of sums up why I'm so passionate about this. And it goes like this. It says, when there is light in the soul, there will be beauty in the person. When there's beauty in the person, there will be harmony in the house. When there is harmony in the house, there will be order in the nation. And when there is order in the nation, there will be peace in the world. And my prayer and my wish for all of us is that we know that light in our own souls. And through that, we help create peace here on this planet of ours.
Oh my gosh. What an amazing way to finish this conversation. Thank you again, Marcy. Everyone that has been here, just take a moment before you come back for our next speaker. Take a moment and just, if you can, get outside or get your feet on the ground or just get away from your phone or your laptop for a minute. And just allow this to resonate with you. Let it sink in. And we will see you back here at the Medicine of Mindset Summit with our next amazing speaker.